Hello and welcome to the Exit Readiness Podcast. My name is Pat Ennis of Ennis Legacy Partners, and I'm here with my co-host, Walter Dial, who is a partner at Gelman, Rosenberg & Friedman CPAs, located in Bethesda, Maryland. Walter, what do you know about captive insurance? I'm sure it's an abundance of knowledge.
Like a lot of topics, I know just enough to be dangerous. So, you know, I've looked at them before. Very interesting concept. Mm-hmm. And in the right situation, it seems like the potential for them is enormous.
Yeah, well, the extent of my knowledge is limited at best. I understand it to be a risk management strategy that can help a business owner or business owners reduce insurance costs and maybe more control insurance costs, but that's about it. However, our guest today is going to, of course, increase our knowledge about captive insurance, and particularly how it might be helpful to a business owner or owners in planning for their eventual exit. Rick Gower is our guest. Rick is a certified senior advisor and wealth management advisor at Lara May & Associates here in the Washington, D.C. area. And captive insurance companies, what they are and how they can benefit you as a business owner is our topic. Okay, Rick, it's great to have you with us here today, buddy. How are you doing?
Doing great, Pat. Nice to be online with both of you.
Well, terrific. Thanks for joining us. First question, let's begin with the basics here, Rick. What is a captive insurance company?
That is a very good question because, as you had indicated early on, many people are maybe familiar with the word, but not how it applies or what it means. And mm-hmm. a captive insurance company is basically a property and casualty insurance company. It's established to provide coverage primarily for a single parent company and its business owners. Typically the owner of the company itself is also the owner of the captive insurance company. They are set up to insure, and you had mentioned this, enterprise risk. Risk for which commercial insurance companies typically don't provide or may provide, but it's very expensive.
Mm-hmm. So, Rick, are these kind of new to the market? They don't seem to be real popular.
They're not new, actually. The captives have been around actually since London. It was when the first one was created, traced back to 1861. They started coming about more so with multinational companies in the 20s, and companies like British Petroleum, Unilever, Lufthansa started creating these wholly owned insurance companies. Today, most of the Fortune 500 companies that you're familiar with, ExxonMobil, UPS, Boeing, AT&T, Verizon, New York Times, have their own captives.
So would, you know, the typical clients that Pat and I work with are somewhere maybe 10 to 25 million in revenue. Is a captive appropriate in some of these circumstances, do you think?
Yeah. You know, normally speaking, captive insurance suit a wide range of companies, and we're familiar, or if we were in the industry much, that large companies do different types of things, one of those being setting up captives to help insure their own risks, you know, suitable to their business type. Smaller companies, of course, you know, don't often have the wherewithal to be able to do that, but they can benefit by setting up captive insurance plan and structure for other types of risk, enterprise risks that they may have. The IRS specifically has a code, and that code 831B talks provisionally about the tax savings for these small captive insurance companies. So they don't have to be huge to do this. These companies, that tax code is structured in such a way that the companies are able to put, you know, $1 million away from an insurance perspective, unlike, of course, a UPS or a ExxonMobil, who are putting, you know, hundreds, if not billions, into coverage. But the big benefit there for these smaller companies is that they also are gaining the same kind of benefit that the large companies are. And that's huge when you start talking about the income tax savings that's going to be coming about, the underwriting profits and premiums that the captive is gaining over years of use.
Rick, what kind? You mentioned enterprise risk. What exactly? What kinds of enterprise risk are you talking about?
So there are literally dozens and dozens of types of enterprise risk. I'm just going to name a few, and you can kind of see how these fit in your own business. But one today that's actually very prevalent is something like data breach, okay, hacking or virus exposure. So if you're a software company, a data company, that's huge. I mean, because that's your business. Something in the DC metropolitan area that we're very familiar with: continuing resolutions, contract risk. Okay, based on the fact that the government can't get its act together, and you're relying on paying your employees and your subcontractors. How do you do that if now you're under a continuing resolution issue? One that a lot of companies use it for is deductible reimbursement. So when you think of workman's comp, those types of things, you've got deductibles. If you're a fleet owner and you've got a lot of vehicles out on the road, you've got a lot of deductible reinsurance risk there. Doctors, hospitals, facilities like that, HIPAA violations would be one. I mean, you're not going, the key here is that you're not running down to your local insurance representative, PNC rep, and getting coverages for these kinds of things. So it's important to see that this is enterprise risk that, typically speaking, you're not addressing as a business owner.
So let me ask you a question. So I guess two things. One is, I've always perceived these as being kind of expensive for a client to set up. So I think that plays into what you were saying before about the size of the company that it may be appropriate for. And the IRS doesn't like these, right?
Well, I mean, naturally the IRS, one of the important components here is that the company, when establishing this, is not, and this is no different, working with attorneys, estate planners, et cetera, we're not utilizing the captive insurance company as a means for tax avoidance. We are first and foremost looking to form a captive insurance company that's actuarially insuring enterprise risk. And that formation must be related to a specific business purpose. You're not just doing it from a tax avoidance perspective.
Okay, that makes sense. Yep. And then are they fairly expensive to set up, correct?
No. I mean, this is not for somebody who's got, a small business that's, got $100,000 a year profit. No. But if you are, in the $5, $10, $25, $100 million range company of revenue, various sizes there, your enterprise risk is different based on what type of business you have. So if you look at a franchise such as a Chick-fil-A or a McDonald's, well, the quality locations are averaging, anywhere between $5, $9, $10 million of revenue. That's a perfect size company because you are in a pool of other captive insurance. You are creating this in the structure, the 831B that the IRS has coded, that allows you to be able to benefit from a size number of other individuals that have already been established. So you are not, if you will, forking over all the dollars to establish and set up one captive insurance for yourself.
Okay, I understand. That's great.
Yep. Yep.
Are there a number of different owners or members to a captive?
So no, actually, when you establish an individual captive insurance, it is exactly that, captive, meaning it is for your company. We'll just say company A, and you're establishing captive B. Captive can be owned by anyone. So it can be owned by the owner of company A. It could be owned by partners, son and daughter. It could be owned by a trust. So that part makes it easy from an ownership on the back end perspective. What you're probably mentioning or thinking about is what would be classified as the reinsurance piece or the captive pool. And that's just like the major insurance companies that you're used to hearing about, you know, on the TV in the world, those companies reinsure with each other. And that way they spread the risk. But they still, Prudential is its own company, Nationwide is its own company, et cetera. But they reinsure that risk by not having it all on their books, mm-hmm. so to speak. And we can go through an example of that if you'd like.
Yeah, if you could give us an example of how the whole thing works, that'd be fantastic.
Sure. So, thinking about different size companies, pick a company, and just for some math purposes here, I'll say, you know, your company is $50 million in revenue. That may sound, you know, exceedingly high for a company who's only doing $10 million or $5 million, but think about profit margin. Most $50 million companies aren't, you know, at a 30% profit margin, but a lot of smaller companies have a 20% or 30% profit margin. So that kind of is relative. But start with a $50 million company. You've got insurable risk. And what type, we don't know. We're going to find out by utilizing a 3-page analysis just to determine eligibility on the front end. But let's say that you've come up with $4 million worth of enterprise insurable risk. All right. That $4 million of enterprise insurable risk, you're going to have a premium based on what that coverage is. And we're just going to say that for this purposes, that annual premium is $2 million. So your captive insurance company is going to bill company A, all right, your primary company, for $2 million, which you pay a premium. That premium is normally a tax deductible P&C expense, business expense. So you're gaining an expense from that perspective. And now you've got coverage in areas that you didn't have before. But what happens if something comes about and I need to make a claim? If you make a claim, that coverage is in the reinsurance pool. So let's say it's a $100,000 claim. And because of the way the captive structure is, you're typically, and I'd say typical, it's very close to this number, but you're typically responsible for 50% of that claim. So $100,000, your captive is responsible for paying $50,000 of that. And the pool, which is made up of hundreds of other captives, incrementally covers the other $50,000.
So how would a business owner find out if a captive can benefit them in their business, Rick? Is it a tedious process? Is it expensive? How do they go about doing it?
So the very first thing I mentioned it just a second ago is they would just simply fill out a 3-page analysis form talking about revenue, type of business, et cetera, to determine the initial eligibility. Once that eligibility on the front end has been determined that, yes, there's a possibility, well, then at that point, the captive owners, and business owners should evaluate, you know, well, not only is it good for my business from an insurance perspective, enterprise risk perspective, but also can it provide me or give me other benefits, such as will it help me with a wealth transfer structure or possible asset protection or business succession planning? You know, what's my exit out of my business? And utilizing captive insurance as another tool, it's a unique tool because in the process, it's providing you with coverage and it can be then structured in a way that on the back end, you're able to come out of it with huge tax benefits. And we can talk about that as well.
Yeah, well, maybe you can talk about that now, particularly in regard to, you know, Walter and I helping owners plan their exits.
Yeah.
You know, the business that we're in and in our practice areas. Of course, we're interested and curious as to how a captive could help a business owner somehow have another option or help facilitate a successful exit from their business.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the first part, and Walter, you alluded to this on the front end, you know, the captives are governed by very strict rules and regulations. So the expenses and the claims at the end of every year, and underwriting profits, premium on that premium income, all of that is retained inside the captive. That is tax exempt. And also it's no longer at risk. So remember that $2 million that we mentioned before? Well, that premium goes into the captive. If there were no claims, there'd be basic expenses. Those expenses being, you know, for audit fees, filing fees, various types of legal coverages, et cetera. But in the end, that money is now booked, if you will. Think of it just like car insurance. At the beginning of the year, you pay your premium and you have car insurance for a year. If you and we know why insurance companies have the largest buildings in town. That's because you didn't have an accident, but at the end of the year, they kept your money. They don't give any back. Well, a captive insurance company for a business owner operates exactly the same way. So if we followed suit that, let's say the business owner has their business for 5 years and they've got premiums going out to the tune of $2 million a year, that would be $10 million of funds going into the captive. And after the fifth year, after each year, actually, those $2 million come off the table because they're no longer at risk. The amount of risk at any one time is only the current year's premium. Okay. So for a business owner, I've now been able to cover my risk, but at the end of that 10-year or 5-year period of time, I would have, in this case, $10 million minus fees. And so what's that look like? Well, let's just say that we had a $100,000 claim per year. We had, those claims had to be paid by us. Well, the captive only covers 50% of that. So that's $250,000. And then we had the other legal expenses, management fees, audit fees, filing fees with the local authorities in reference to setting up the captive and maintaining the captive in the state that it was assigned. When we're said and done, for easy math, let's just say that number comes out to $1 million of expenses, $250,000 and $500,000 or $750,000 worth of other management expenses. Okay. Now, during that time frame, I've got $9 million at the end of that time. And it did grow. I have to pay tax on the growth income, but during that entire time frame, I don't pay tax on the other dollars. So I only pay tax during the 5 years on the growth. But let's say we had no growth. We have ended 5 years, we've got $9 million. Mr. or Mrs. Business Owner now has come to you and said, well, we're selling our business. We've got somebody, or you've got somebody, we're selling our business. What happens to the captive? Well, first, I don't need the captive anymore because I'm selling my business. Second, what about me getting my money out of the captive because I'm the owner of it also? That $9 million comes out as a distribution, as a qualified dividend, long-term cap gains rates. What does that look like then? I've got $9 million. I've had expenses on my 10. I've got $9 million left over. That means that I've now got to pay long-term cap gains rates of approximately $1.8 million. I walk from my captive with about $7.2 million. So if you look at the dollar figure of starting at 10, I now have an effective tax and expense rate of 28% on that money. So Mr. and Mrs. Business Owner have had quality coverage, enterprise coverage in areas that they probably never thought about before. Now they've sold their business. They've structured that deal. It's done. You've helped them do all of that. And now they can take distributions from their captive insurance company. Now, if they don't want to, and this is very common, they can let the captive insurance company remain dormant, not doing anything except for growing. They would have to pay tax on the investment income growth, just the income piece, but they would not pay any taxes until long-term cap gains rates, until they distributed those funds out.
So it sounds like the way you describe that, Rick, it would be particularly helpful to maybe a partnership. If the partners of a Well, they set up a captive company, and you built up this liquidity over the years, and one of the partners wanted to leave. Have you seen it used that way to
absolutely
help cash
absolutely
out partners? And
yep. So situation, you've got three partners. One of the partners happens to be older. And, you know, from the typical scenario of a business that's operating, if they bonus that person out, well, what's their tax rate going to be? I mean, yeah, very high. probably in the 50% range without sneezing.
Right.
So instead, you know, if as long as we, again, following the rules that we have an enterprise risk that is business related, et cetera, we establish a captive, and then we can benefit from that by establishing, we can structure who owns the captive. Either that person owns it outright, and that was our thought process all along, or they you know, were in shares, and individuals had different amounts of percentage of that company. And those distributions, they don't have to close the captive down. They can distribute those funds at any time in the future. So partner A and partner B said, I don't want any distributions. And it was agreed that partner C would get distributions.
Did we ask you this question? Did we ask you how a captive makes money? If we did ask it, I don't remember the answer. So can you answer it again?
Sure. So the captive is actually making money on the premiums that are coming into it. So again, we use that $2 million scenario. So in the beginning of the year, $2 million premium bill comes in to Company A, and Company A writes that check for $2 million to the captive. During that year, there are basic expenses that have to be covered for running the captive, managing it, spending qualifying through different legal requirements, audits that are required every year, okay? Whatever the jurisdiction is that it's created in has its own rules and regulations as to what must be done for that filing and maintaining that captive. So those fees come out of that $2 million. If there was no claim that year, then there would only be those fees. But we had used that example. I said there was a $100,000 claim. That $100,000, the captive only has to pay 50% of that. So maybe at the end of a year, there's, between expenses and the claim, $100,000 of expense and claim dollars that come off of the captive, $2 million. December 31st, if we're in a calendar year, December 31st, those $1.9 million remaining dollars are now booked as profit for the captive. They don't pay tax on those, because it stays inside the captive. They don't pay tax on those profits. It sits inside the captive tax-free, only paying taxes on the growth income for the future and at distribution at long-term capital gains rates. So the profit then is $1.9 million. And let's just say that Company A that year had an abysmal year. Okay. Not that that would ever happen in the business world. And so they didn't have profit to make premium payments for the captive or for any other bills. So they didn't pay a premium payment that next year. Doesn't mean the captive goes away. It just means the captive didn't get a $2 million premium, but it also means the captive is not at risk for anything. They never got a premium payment, so they're not insuring Company A for anything. And then year three, Company A does really well, and they start back up and they make their premium payment again. So that means that then at that point, the captive would have an insurable amount to cover of the $2 million that they've gotten in premiums.
So it sounds like captives could be appropriate for a lot more businesses than I had originally thought. Is there a rule of thumb for situations where a captive just does not make sense?
typically speaking, the very first part is, you know, what kind of enterprise risk do you have? And so I'm going to throw a couple of real world examples out there that you might not think of, but this is, you know, first and foremost, what do we have that, that we're insuring? So you may or may not even remember this, but so there was a doctor up in Baltimore, and he had clearly gotten on the wrong side of his patients. They thought that he had done some bad things, and they went out and literally purchased a full page ad in the newspaper, blasting him, defamation of character. Okay. Now he, you know, had his attorneys, they went to court, and he was completely expunged of any wrongdoing whatsoever. Everything was fine. It didn't solve the fact that his face was plastered all over the newspaper and news for this. And so, you know, he has a claim. And so that would be one of the areas from an enterprise risk that you're not going to go down to, you know, State Farm and get coverage like that. Another good example would be, this was several years ago, Holiday Inn specifically had, you know, sent out warnings to a lot of franchise owners that they were not living up to their franchise obligations. And in the end, Holiday Inn pulled over 800 franchise licenses. Now, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Smith own this hotel. It has a big Holiday Inn sign on it. They've built their business around the name of Holiday Inn, no different than any other business that's franchised, McDonald's, et cetera. When that franchise goes away, that's franchise risk. You know, you're doing everything right, and maybe they didn't do anything wrong and they ultimately get it back, but that's a risk that you have. So the first part is the franchise, different sizes. I mean, a McDonald's is totally different than a Holiday Inn. A doctor's practice is not the same as a franchise. A government contractor who is waiting on a contract renewal agreement from the government, and that's being delayed because of continuing resolutions. There are very small contractors and very large ones. Typically, dollar-wise, you don't look at a company that is under probably $4 or $5 million. It's all relative. You could have a, you know, a $50 million company, but their profit margin is, you know, 1%. That they're probably not going to have the ability to actually set up a captive, because normally speaking, to make it worthwhile, you're going to be in the $500,000 to $1 million or above, or much above, in premium numbers to be able to make it cost effective, because there are some fixed costs that are associated with setting up the captive and maintaining the captive, that if you're only, you know, 200,000, it can be done. There are different structures to do it, but the typical is that company that's got a solid profit, you know, in the $500,000 on up category.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rick, is it expensive to maintain?
Not overly, no. I mean, percentage-wise, I mean, I was using some figures there. You know, you may be looking at, again, so you got $1 million. You may be looking at 3 or 4% from a maintenance cost perspective. So 3 or 4% on $1 million, granted, that's real money at $30,000 or $40,000. But when you back that into, okay, well, we wanted to bonus out the owners of our company 500,000, or, you know, 50% taxes on that million. Well, there's a big difference in 50% on taxes and 28, which we used in that analogy that I used earlier.
Okay, well, you know, this has been a hugely helpful. I've learned a lot today. I'm sure our listeners will too. What should we ask that we haven't asked you yet? Is there a question or two that you think, boy, you guys should ask those questions and we haven't asked them?
I think you guys have actually done a really good job. You know, the first and foremost situation is that you don't go into this just simply looking at this from a tax only perspective. You've got to be in a business that actually has real enterprise risk. The IRS, of course, is looking for companies that are only doing this from a tax perspective. So The initial part of that is do it right and do it for the right reason. The other benefits are huge and add to the pile of why you should do it. And it doesn't mean that, you know, you're not looking at buying the Ferrari because it's red and it goes 150 miles an hour, but it also goes from point A to point B. There's just added benefits that you get with going with a captive that you can't get otherwise. So that's, I think that's one of the main focus areas. And it's not just a tool, you know, for a business that is, hey, we really have a lot of risk. We are trying to help ourselves from that perspective. It's also from a business perspective that I've got a business that I'm doing really well, but something could happen. And if it does, can I address that? That is not being handled today by your local PNC guy.
Okay, great. Rick, if listeners want to reach you, if they think that they'd like to learn more about captives and whether or not it's going to be a viable alternative for their situation, how would they get in touch with you?
They can simply give me a phone call or shoot me an email. Telephone number, area code 571-405-3886, or my email, rgow at laramayllc.com, laramayllc.com. Or if they can't remember any of that, if you just Google Rick Gow, G-O-W, I'm all over the web.
All right, terrific. Rick, thank you again for joining us today. Great content, great job, great delivery, tremendous guests. We're really grateful that you would join us and take the time. Hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you both, Pat and Walter. You guys have a great day, and thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks, Rick.
Walter, what do you think? You know, what should listeners take away from this discussion about captive insurance companies?
I think it was a great discussion. Rick was certainly very knowledgeable. You know, I look at it as, you know, when clients contact us for help, whether it's, you know, strategic financial planning or exit planning, you know, whatever it is they're asking us to help them with, I kind of look at it as, you know, we go in there with a toolbox. Mm-hmm. And not every tool fits every situation, but the more tools we have, the better equipped we are to assist clients. And I think this is just another tool for our toolbox. I mean, in certain mm-hmm. situations, mm-hmm. I think this could really be useful to some clients.
Yeah, yeah. Well, certainly it's going to help them or could very possibly help them minimize insurance costs, have more control, potentially protect themselves financially, and even provide some added or needed liquidity for an exit. Folks, if you'd like to speak with either Walter or myself about helping you to plan your exit, you can reach Walter at 301-951-9090, or you can reach me at 301-943-8203. Thanks, folks, for tuning in. Until next time on the Exit Readiness Podcast, this is Pat Ennis and Walter Dial signing off.